Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do, from Namibia, Africa, and around the world. Tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Tune in from Monday to Friday only on Eagle FM. Welcome to this business and economic segment? No, that's at 6. This is Home Run with Helmut and Dwight, of course, your drive time show here until the hour of 6. That's when business and economic segment takes over. So wherever it is you are tuned in from, thank you for tuning in and thank you for taking interest in what we talk about. I'm running out of friends for the most part, because most of the people that are in my circle of friends, every time that I bring up my topics of interest that I like talking about, they start going, "What's SDG?" I'm like, "Huh? What's UN?" I'm like, "Okay, maybe UN I should stop being friends," because today's discussion is not based on me, cooking my friends. After all, this is not Mind the Gap. This is Home Run. Today's discussion is going to be based on two things. That's business and biodiversity. Now, before we go any further, let's just do what we do best, or something that I actually recommend when it comes to if you're going to be on talk radio since 2022, you're going to have to learn to do things somewhat, break it down, because I've been told that I have the tendency, we, Dwight is included in that, we have the tendency of just diving in and assuming everyone is can understand. But you have to understand one thing we know is that our listeners are smart. It's just that my friends tune in and they start listening to things like NDP6, all that, and they're like, "What the heck is that?" And like, you should have started listening a long time ago. It's a good thing you started, but just keep, you're gonna get the hang of it. You know, 1, 2, 3 podcasts in, and you are just going to start understanding the language. You don't just storm in a country and start, or more like in a new line of work and start understanding, the language that's used in that, in that environment. The same way that your doctor will tell you you have cardiac arrest. Now at this point you're thinking, where the hospital? Why are people getting arrested here? Nope. Bro's heart is decided to go on strike. And, oxygen is like, okay, fine. Well, I'm good. I'm not coming in too either, if you're not breathing. But now, putting all that aside, so let's define terms. Today's discussion is based on two main things that we're going to be singing along today's Home Run, and that's biodiversity and business. We all want to venture into the world of business, and we're talking on a global level here, because the document, which is going to be our main source of reference today, it's going to take us a bit to 2010. South Korea, fasten a seatbelt, all shall be well within the course of Home Run. So biodiversity, in short, according to the World Health Organization's own definition of biodiversity. You have to understand this is a biodiversity and business. Now, biodiversity is another way of saying, different life forms. Bio, well, that's life. Diverse means different. That means preserve both flora and fauna, aka trees and animals. Now, in other words, when you are preserving you have to preserve them and also feed yourself at the same time. That means start practicing ways of life that start with the word sustainable. If you have ever heard of things like sustainable beef production, sustainable crop farming, sustainable this, sustainable, it means you are it basically means you figuring out a way of life that does not harm the environment, at least not on a severe scale that leads to negative impacts like desertification, for example. Now, just how on earth do you do that? Well, sustainable. So, before we get to today's discussion. Okay, now that's just Dwight being administrative.
Moving mics and moving papers and stuff.
Sorry about that, guys. So you were still asking a question, Albert, yeah.
Biodiversity and business. Those are the two words that we're going to be singing. Yeah, basically biodiversity and the world of business. What's going on here is, the advice we are being given, more like recommendation coming out of the global way of doing things.
Mm.
Thanks to climate change. And also if you look at, the requirement is that we have to interact with our environment in a way that keeps the environment, that does not deteriorate the environment. We have to farm and conduct business in a sustainable way that does not harm the environment at the end of the day. How on earth do you do that? Well, that's why I was now coming in with the example of sustainable this, sustainable that, sustainable that.
Well, Helmut, here's the nice thing. Everything today is about sustainability, and it's not just about financial sustainability.
Yeah.
It's that the financial, since you are doing an activity that costs, that is financed with money to extract something out of the ground or out of the sea or out of the air or out of a tree or anything,
you
now have to sort of like use money once again that was generated from the proceeds. Well, let me say the proceeds, obviously, the word proceed obviously means it is a benefit you generated from extracting said particular natural resource out of the ground or out of wherever.
Yeah.
So using a portion or percentage of the proceeds ultimately to reinvest into rehabilitative actions. Now, this plays squarely into that Uis lithium mining discussion.
Yeah.
Because what was the biggest concern for the local community there of Uis is that the previous miners had left holes in the ground wherein their goats and livestock
kept falling into,
and children and young people also at night when they can't see, they fall into these particular holes in the ground, which is obviously of great concern because it means these were mining sites that were unrehabilitated because they are still exposed and that they actually play a pivotal part in being hazards, you know, or being hazardous. And even today, Helmut, just before I came here into the studio, I came from a particular update regarding, you know, the mining exploration in the Omaika region, where even the environmental commissioner, Mr. Mufeti, says or stated or highlighted, today everything is about a sustainable approach. So it's not just about an SDG approach, you know, top-down situation. This is also from looking at the impact that a activity, for example, let's say mining, plays in the community, in the potential positive impacts and potential negative impacts in one direction. Because today we can't just look at things like in a straight line. It cannot just be linear. It cannot just be, okay, Dwight, you want to move from point A and you want to get to point Z. What steps are you going to take between point A and point Z? It looks linear on paper. It looks linear like I'm explaining it. But in actual fact, when you get down onto the ground, when you go and interact, when you start the digging, when you start the fishing, when you start the processing, there are continuous impact or zones of impact and zones of interest that keep popping up.
Yeah.
So, for example, the discussion of when you look at this report. So this report, Helmut, basically also overlaps into many things in the conversations that we already have in Namibia.
It took me to 2010.
Yeah, that too. And even into the our Bible, the guide to the Namibian economy also speaks, you get hints of, the sustainable use and the approach of leaving foreign entities to actually be the most participants in the extractive sector. And another extractive sector, obviously, which is agriculture, has a lot of local, participation in it. but it is actually not as economically impactful, i.e. in the sense of that it still is, and this is according to the labor force survey data, it still is the largest employer, agriculture, fishing, and it's agriculture, fishing, and forestry that's put together, all three of them. They're still the largest employer by 87,000 as of 2023, versus mining that is a meager 15,000. Let that hang there. So for you guys that want to go and mine, participate in the mining sector, just know it's a very technical. You should be highly skilled for you to participate in that sector.
Yep.
And that this is not the 1980s or the 1970s of the stories that I heard.
Play cowboy.
Where people were just recruited just like this. Yeah, what were you doing? Oh no, I am, you know, Jason from the Argonauts, you know, and I have exploration. My CV says I only explore. Okay, fine. You know, you're good. You can go down into that mining shaft. No. Helmut, what is your level of education? No, I only have a grade 5. No, you're good. You're good. You can read and write. Just go down that mine shaft.
For shovels.
Yeah. What's your name, Patrick? Oh, yeah, Patrick, what can you do? No, I learned a thing or two about driving from my grandfather. Yeah, that's good. We don't care if you have no license. Go and work. That was a situation that I heard of before 1990. That's literally how. No, literally how, Helmut. People, the stories that I've heard, people that had no background in the mining sector. Okay.
And yeah, that's what happens when you spend over 100 years colonizing people.
True, true. And that's the situation that we primarily see happening in the DRC.
Yeah.
Which is most the child, the child labor accusations that continuously are thrown at the DRC because they are not bringing this thing under control. Do you know how friendly those guys are on the site? They even allow the journalists to come on site and say, no, come look at the operations. Come look. You know, these are wonderful, wonderful locals here. And then the kids even wave at the reporter with the cameras and everything. They say, we drive there. We drive here and we do this.
You know, that's actually the most painful thing because they have actually normalized it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when you get to the point of, of looking at things like that as a way of life, like, you know what, this is it for me.
Mm.
It's actually very painful because for you and me, if we were to be taken, they would just look at that and go like, there is no in hell. But like, what am I doing here? For them, it's not very different from child soldiers.
Mm.
Because when you are raised in that environment, you know, the only thing that you know is to pull the trigger. That's it.
Yep.
And now to you, it becomes normal and you now start, living in a very dangerous, dangerous society. And sometimes, especially for child soldiers, you become a danger to society without you even knowing there is such a thing as being a danger to a society.
True.
Yeah. Now, when it comes to our interaction with our own environment, and this is where the biodiversity discussion, especially in terms of conducting business now on a large scale, comes in.
Mm.
According to the World Health World Health Organization, they put up an article in February last year where they sort of like summarize how much we rely on our environment advanced technological wise, as we would like to look at ourselves.
Mm.
There are a lot of adults that still thinks that milk is just coming from a grocery store. And there are a lot of adults that think that meat comes from a fridge, again, from a grocery store.
Helmut, please, man. Those are the guys from the United States and from Europe.
I didn't want to mention names, but thank you for pointing
that
out.
No, we have to mention names here. Yeah. We can't be that embarrassing. No, no.
Yeah, like I feel like you can feed someone into stupidity. Now, well, sometimes just
I did not say that, guys. Sometimes I did just, not say that.
Sometimes just allow people to go out there and experience the reality on the ground.
Yeah.
You can't tell me a fully grown man believes milk is from a kitten.
Yeah.
Now, World Health Economic Forum summarizes not World Health Organization, World Health Economic Forum. What the heck is that? Now, interaction with our environment. These are the numbers from the World Health Organization. More than 75% of global crops rely on pollinators contributing to 235 to 577 billion annually global agriculture output. Agriculture, you have that from land. Over 50% of modern medicine are derived from where? Natural sources. Again, your plants here. And forests store 80% of terrestrial biodiversity. Did you know the Sahara Desert provides the Amazon Desert with fertile soil?
And guess how it happens? Please explain.
Yeah.
Just explain for our listeners.
So, topsoil, you know that wind that people are complaining about in the Sahara Desert? If that wind stopped, the Amazon jungle will be in trouble. That wind needs to blow strong enough to transport literally across the Atlantic Ocean.
Sand particles. To the Amazon.
To Brazil.
Yeah. And to it's Brazil, Colombia, Venezuela, Suriname. What's the other place's name? Right next to Venezuela. The place that Venezuela almost also 3 January last year. Was it Suriname? Yeah, it was Suriname. And what's the British territory? Suriname is the British territory. There's a territory. One is a Dutch territory, and the other one is a British territory. Suriname is the British.
I know there are 2 Guyanas. There is French Guyana.
French Guyana is on South America. So between Brazil and Venezuela, there are these little 3 territories.
Yeah.
One is French, one is Dutch, one is British. Suriname is the independent one. The other one that still has British links or British, associations is literally the territory. I don't know if it's Suriname or not, but it's a territory between Venezuela and Suriname.
Yeah. Now.
When you look at the
numbers of just how much we rely on our environment, and this is not something that that needs pointing out, especially for people that are living in developed countries. Because for us, especially if you look at the rural setups, we're still very much in interaction with our environment, and this is something that we have been doing for a very long time. Now, because of the whole urbanization thing, we are sort of like being twisted into adopting a new way of life, which we have to, which is where the whole conflict of conservancy areas and grazing land now comes in.
Oh yeah, it's the 2 Guyanas.
The 2 Guyanas.
French is the first one, then Suriname in the middle, then Guyana.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy, do I have one heck of a story for that Guyana, not the French one. But anyway. It involves oil. A very cool one. Also involves Venezuela. Now, I've got to stop watching documentaries. Now, in 2010, a document was produced in a discussion that took place in South Korea. Is it Busan, South Korea? Now that's what is known as a Busan Agreement from the name of that town.
Mm.
And if you go, it's the United Nations were also involved in this discussion. And one thing that they pointed out. This again, the IPBES, the Intergovernmental Science Policy Platform on Biodiversity and Ecosystem Services. Now, they are basically an intergovernmental science policy platform.
Yep.
Yeah. Now,
which the US also withdrew from.
Yeah, of course. This is a collab between science and policy. You have science. You have people that are, that are experts at environmental protection, for example, that are assisting policymakers to tailor their policy in a way that preserves the environment.
Yep.
Now, if you go to the agreement that that came out of, more like that laid the foundation of the report that we're going to use today, that's number 3 of that discussion. They did point out something interesting that they have attendance. I don't even know. Now, I lost that part. Yeah, adoption. The representative of governance present at the meeting adopted recommendations in a form of above-mentioned outcome document. At the time of the adoption, the recommendations, one representative endorsed by another, voiced concerns about text being adopted. The first received his right and comment on the issue of the appropriate forums. Second, I'm gonna come back to that one. Just mixed up my documents there. Now, this intergovernmental platform on biodiversity and science, basically, it's just there to connect policymakers and science, and so these two can work together to protect the environment. In a way, today's document is based on how to conduct business in environmental friendly way.
Yep.
And this week is just going to be, well, this week's home run subjects are just going to be feeding into each other. Why? It's because, well, we just talked about, the energy transition in the shipping industry.
Yep.
Yeah. That also feeds into doing business the more like a environmental friendly way.
Even though shipping contributes 3% of global carbon dioxide emissions, they feel they wish to do their part. So no one is taking them to task about why are they not doing their part. We know they are doing their part.
Yeah, and, we're not here to make laws.
Yeah, and they highlighted, like the guy from the IEA said, we're not here to make laws directly. We just want to gauge direct experiences and knowledge of what people have seen, heard, and experienced out in the real world.
Yeah.
A lot of disclaimers, like we said back on Tuesday. No? Monday. There was a lot of exclaimers. So, yeah.
Sort of like the, IAEA also just pointed out, you know, we're not here to change policies.
Even this thing that I event that I came to just yeah. came from just now.
Yeah. No, we're not here.
Okay, I sort know.
Like that's a very touchy subject.
I know there are Namibians, even journalists, who think that the UN has to supersede the Namibian government on Namibian issues.
Yeah.
I don't know where this comes from. I also had that same misperception and misunderstanding in terms of the UN's role. Mm-hmm. For example, I once had to do an interview, Helmut, about what was the thing, doch, back in 2019, about these the high school kids in the refugee camp of Osire.
Yeah.
And I tried explaining, because the person that I spoke to, who connected me to who I can talk to, explained to me, you can't talk to the UN people directly of the UNHCR office in Namibia, because they are not the lead agency in Namibia. The lead agency is the Ministry of Child Welfare. Remember when it was still the two ministries? One was Women and Child Affairs, and the other one was Marginalized People and something, and Disabled Peoples and so on. Remember when it was the two different ministries?
Which one had the poverty eradication?
It was that also, the one that had a former minister that was the religious leader, Kamita, as the minister. Remember? So, in that scenario, back in 2019, I tried to talk to the UNHCR people, and they said, no, you don't talk to us. We advise the ministries that have to deal with, for example, the refugee camp known as Osire.
Yeah.
They're somewhere in Ochotonchupa region. The downside was, Hamut, I was informed at that moment, oh, so the lead agency is Ministry of Health, Ministry of Home Affairs, then Ministry of Health, then Ministry of that one with multiple, you know, elements, because there's obviously children involved. And then
Ministry of Gender.
Today we know it as Ministry of Gender, but before 2020 it was two ministries. That's why they have the two buildings.
Yeah, I know. I know it had, you know,
it was gender and something, and then poverty and eradication and marginalized people on the other side.
Yeah.
So at that point,
and poverty was like, hold my beer.
At that point. So I was educated at that point that you can't talk directly to the UN agency people about a Namibian issue, because they just advise a ministry
yeah.
to tackle a Namibian issue, who are the direct custodians for you, the Namibian.
Yeah.
So from such a perspective, even right now today, me coming here from a specific event there at Minister of Environment, even someone asked the question, why can't Ministry of Environment take a decision, make a decision, yay, nay, something, something, here, there, or why does this UN agency not decide for Namibia? And then the environmental commissioner and the director from nuclear energy in Ministry of Health highlighted, listen, a UN agency can only recommend, suggest something to us and advise us, but the Namibian guys have to make the last decision based upon information that they have available to them.
Recommended to them.
Exactly. Which is also the particular perspective that I respect and that I like, that we are clear to communicate this particular perspective. The decision still lies within the Namibians that work in the ministries, the various ministries we have,
yeah,
and the Namibians that we vote into office, like the ministers, president, the local council. Okay, I have very few faith in the local councillors, but the other peoples, yes.
That's Dwight.
No, Helmut, literally after 2025's epiphany, which slapped me against the forehead, wherein I realized the reason as to why Namibia's whole holistic development is stagnated, is because anyone outside of Windhoek doesn't understand I'm now not talking about the everyday person, I'm talking about the councillors. So the councillors outside of Windhoek don't know what development is.
Again, that's Dwight. So we are back to the centralized power structure.
Once again. So the nice thing is, we've got a lot of things in place. I even saw that other report earlier today. Okay, I read partially through it, but the one based upon Namibia's diversification efforts, because obviously this report of IPES also speaks about diversification.
Yeah.
Meaning they mentioned there through governance, try to strengthen things like your regulation, your oversight abilities, and all that. And the UN guys actually gave us a thumbs up. Namibia already has sufficient enough oversight capabilities and regulatory capabilities. However, it's linking that oversight and the activity that happens on the ground,
mm-hmm,
by, let's for example say, a farmer, or let's for example say, a mining company, or let's for example say, a fishing company, or let's for example say, a factory, or let's for example say, a transport company, or let's for example say, a whole bunch of guys exploring for something somewhere in the bush somewhere. We don't know yet what they're exploring for, but yet they've got the EPL to go and explore, and it just might be something else, you know? That linkage is the particular component, it's the particular problematic area.
Yeah.
It's the gray area, actually, for us.
Now,
well, besides must now volunteer workers at a tannery station or a tannery factory there in Ongwediva.
Yeah.
Who say no? The inputs is ours. But,
immortal cowhide.
But we are here on voluntary basis. We don't know who's in charge here.
Yeah, the ad hoc discussion, South Korea, 2010, number three of the outcome of the
discussion. Found it now.
Yeah, I found it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, I filled in nicely there for you.
Really spin my head around. Acknowledge the importance. One of the things that the representative government at the third ad hoc intergovernmental and multi-stakeholder meeting on the intergovernmental science policy platform in biodiversity and ecosystem convened in Busan, South Korea, from 7 to 11 June 2010.
Yeah,
They had a list of agreements, but one that basically caught my eyes, number three, which reads, acknowledge, this is the parties now, do acknowledge the importance of terrestrial, marine and coastal and inland water biodiversity and ecosystem services, which, while critically important to sustainable development and current future human well-being, particularly with regards to poverty eradication, are currently experiencing a significant loss. Also acknowledging that the science policy the science-policy, this is the collab going on now, the scientists and policymakers. The science policy interface on biodiversity and ecosystem service must be strengthened at all levels. It's not a one man's job.
Yeah.
Like, it's not just the role of the Ministry of Environment to take care of the environment.
Well, the word environment is pretty large.
Yeah, it's a very broad one.
Yeah. But in our case, which is a good thing, Helmut, because it's a good point you're highlighting.
Yeah, just one post-it.
Yeah.
Now, to strengthen, you have to strengthen your science policy, you know, your science policy collabo on all levels. And furthermore, it's important to ensure that the science is made available is of the highest quality. Now, that's the part that made me go, hey, it's of the highest quality and the independence. In other words, well, if you ask oil guys to investigate what's happening in the oil industry environmental wise, what result do you expect to come out of that?
Well, you'll get high-definition PowerPoint presentations over there.
Look, you can't ask me to investigate myself and expect an independent report.
Or you... Okay, wait. Here's another one. Or you would get AI presenting the high-definition PowerPoint presentation.
Oh, yeah. AI will come in, definitely.
Yeah. And then those guys are just telling the AI, listen, present that part.
Yeah. So what you have is... The World Health Organization is just pointing out the obvious.
Mm.
We need as much as we have advanced technology, as we like to to call it. Oh, it's just me. Okay, we are very much reliant on our environment, medicine wise, food wise, shelter wise. We are very much reliant on our environment. Now the thing is, if we just let everyone play cowboy, then we are going to have a lot of environmental issues. Now, that's where the word sustainable environmental protection now comes in. Mm. You have to take shelter, food, or pharmaceutical products from the environment without risking, desertification. How to do that? It requires some serious agricultural, take, for example, in a lot of developed countries, you'd say that requires a lot of agricultural practice. Agricultural training, because again, we have to shift from shifting cultivation to figuring out alternative ways of fertilizing, keeping the soil fertile without having to sort of move from one place to another. And as long as the soil and the part that you are currently farming is, the nutrients are depleted, you move to the next part. That was the way of life back then. But now you're going to find yourself in a conservancy, and now you have a problem with the Ministry of Environment.
And the wild animals, because then
wildlife conflict comes in.
Yeah, because then you'll claim human-wildlife conflict, and potentially also, the Botswana Defense Force, putting that out there as well. And probably also,
And again, that's Dwight.
And also probably poachers in between, cattle rustlers in between. They use this euphemistic term known as what they call it, livestock theft. But the actual term, Helmut, is actually cattle rustling or livestock rustling.
Huh?
It's a term that comes literally from cowboy books or from Western books. Specific American Westerns, is cattle rustling or livestock rustling was you actually steal someone else's livestock to go sell it somewhere else for a quick buck. It was the earliest format of the asset forfeiture department on an agricultural scale. You and your buddies are on a bunch of horses. I would not prescribe being on donkeys because you would not get anywhere. The cow runs faster than the donkey even. So, they would literally take a portion of your cattle and then go sell it somewhere else for some quick money. They don't run an enterprise of farming. They are literally like, what the go-betweens were back in the 2000s or 2010s. Yeah. They repossess an asset over here just to sell the asset over there for some quick money, and then they do the same activity every day, So, that's the situation that existed then. However,
I have a question.
I had to be dramatic.
This science policy discussion, these people knew what they were recommending, right?
Yes.
Yes. Politicians have to work with scientists. Are you listening to that?
True, even though I have also watched a particular conversation back in last week about the... Well, it starts from... Actually, let me start even earlier from that. It starts from Dwight, my namesake, Eisenhower's famous outgoing speech as President of the United States.
Oh, yeah, that was one heck of a speech.
The speech where he said that the whole discourse about development and prosperity for a country and some part has been hijacked by...
military-industrial complex.
Okay, that part first. The second one was that everything has to be qualified through science and scientific calculations and you know, positioning and all that. Meaning, for example, if you had to look today, and you can see some essence of reality and some factuality in that statement, today you can't just go and become a building contractor, Hamut. Today you are a radio presenter and a stand-up comedian. Tomorrow you decide, you know what? I'm sick and tired of this life. I'm going to start a new career in that direction. I'm going to go build houses and participate in a mass housing project in Divundu. No, you can't, because the local authority of Divundu will ask you, please lay forward, please provide us proof of work that you've built before, proof of work that you have.
We don't want our houses falling on top of us.
Exactly. Or we want to know that you are actually registered with PIPA, registered with Social Security, registered with Ministry of Finance, registered with NAMRA as a tax-paying entity. We don't want to just feed someone's, you know, get-rich-quick schemes that they were concocting somewhere in the back of their mother's yard, who decided, you know, let me become a millionaire overnight by just throwing a proposal out there and hope it sticks to someone's forehead out there. So that's what we see now, because what I listed was a scientific process. You must be registered with Ministry of Finance. You must provide proof that you've been paying taxes. Provide proof of work that you've done such jobs before, you know, like building buildings. So this means, do you have a list of references, contactable projects that you've done before? And those are the things that is literally crippling local procurement, that scientific process in Namibia. Yeah. When you look at it, it's actually crippling Namibia's local procurement. Because who can step in that can say we've done such jobs before? Multinationals coming from a different country, obviously. But yeah, that is the fear. And you actually see a factual representation in the modern day economies, or as what it is known as, neoliberal economics.
Can I take you back to one of the, to the Ministry of Agriculture Office of the Auditor General's report?
Yeah, compliance.
Now, in this whole science policy collabo. Now you are the scientist. You are the science body that's advising the Namibian government on how they can, pass laws that are sustainable for the environment in all the practices, whether it's building of roads or agricultural practice, building schools and all those things.
Yeah.
Now you have two ministries standing at your door, environment and agriculture. Now advise agriculture on fertilizer. On a market ready, go.
And agriculture will tell you it has to be of an organic base.
Uh-huh.
It has to contribute to the well-being and maintenance of the natural environment.
Uh-huh.
Because what does Namibia have? Underground water.
Yeah.
And it should not pollute said underground water.
And what do you think commercial farmers will say about that?
They will say, that is the most expensive fertilizer out there in the planet, in the market. What do you expect money grows on? Do you think money grows on trees? Heck no. Does the money grow on my back? Heck no. You remember how our parents used to say, come pull the money off from my back. You think the money grows here on my back. Pull it off. And then you still sarcastically try to make a gesture. I see a $10 over here.
Yeah, that's
and that's the quickest slap you'll ever get. You
get out.
That's the quickest slap you'll get in history. But yeah, unfortunately, organic fertilizers, which it seems are pretty expensive. But those that are cooked in a lab, not to say that it has any references to
crack.
You know, to crack or what's that thing's name? Meth?
Mm-hmm.
Methamphetamine? No. But literally inorganic or, you know, what's the word that they use for that fertilizer? Chemically concocted fertilizers.
Basically inorganic ones.
Yeah, which are made in labs, which are obviously mass-produced. That stuff, obviously, is cheaper because, you know, it's economies of scale that have been met.
Yeah.
If you can find a way to make the process of production cheaper, yes. Or you can condense the time frame of production, yes. Economies of scale.
Especially condensing the time frame.
A time frame and
also increasing the, you know, the volume.
Yeah, the volume, the output, as well as also also trying to scale down on the inputs, meaning how much money and and ingredients are you.
Because the bottom line is,
How to make money.
How is the return on investment
going to look, yeah, and that particular balance. So that particular question, that particular consideration from that compliance report from the OAG's Office on Ministry of Agriculture clearly pointed that Ministry of Agriculture is not in line with Ministry of Environment.
Yeah, look, I think they know that. The question, you know, the problem is the point you just made. Organic fertilizer is excellent for the environment, but not very much for food security.
True. It's there also to look after the birds, the bees, the insects in the ground, the other small animals that live in the ground and in the same ecosystem where the agriculture, the farmer has to operate in. But go ask the farmer if the farmer thinks about the rest of the ecosystem.
Not much.
Because I can prove to a very ugly situation under Bolsonaro in Brazil, where Bolsonaro said, go and cut down, go and slash and burn from the Amazon forest. Those farmers didn't spend time. They literally went and slashed and burned, which is the biggest concern because people were asking, why would Bolsonaro have such an ugly anti-environmental policy regarding nature conservation and all that. However, Helmut, let me throw in another spanner into this discussion. This is also where science also works literally against other particular developmental goals. For example, in a Namibian context. Now, there's a book that came out just 2 weeks back. Not 2 weeks. Actually, back in last week. And I'd like to procure the book from somewhere. Its book launch was actually held at the National Library in last week. This book it's the second book from one of the authors regarding the Orange River. Now, it has a topic, which is a hypothesis that it proposes in the book that you can actually see manifesting, for example, in a place like it's now known as the Tsau Cape National Park, which is the old Sperrgebied or the Sperrgebied. It doesn't matter if from which particular, you know, disposition you're speaking, you're identifying this from, whether it's from Kwekwekovap or if it's from Afrikaans or from German. This national park is the national park which has unfortunately colonial ties to it. Now, why am I pointing out to this particular scenario? Well, because the aspect of nature conservation and protection and environmental protection is used as an absolute, what is that thing? I almost said detergent. Well, it's used as a deterrent against any humans being able to, you know, utilize this massive uninhabited piece of land that encompasses or that surrounds Lüderitz in its entirety.
Yeah.
Because you've got Aus just outside of the Tsau Cape, but Lüderitz is literally the only settlement allowed in the Tsau Cape because Kolmanskop doesn't exist anymore, which is the ghost town close to Lüderitz, which was the old diamond mining company, town for people that worked and lived at the diamond mine there. And that town was still occupied by people up until the 80s, because I've got siblings that can still tell you stories about, you know, that they people lived there. It was a functioning town, that mining town. The same too also with Kombat, was also a functioning mining town with a thriving, you know, community of people that lived and worked there.
Yeah.
However, if you look at, and this is now the opposite of, for example, Kombat, if you look at the area around Lüderitz, the Tso Cape National Park, you can't even think of having a car breakdown, Helmut, on the way to Lüderitz.
Because then there's no civilization in sight.
It's not just about civilization, not that there's no civilization. Uh-huh. You are being surveilled. Because why is your car stopping here? Now, in any other part of the country, which is once again, which is another hypothesis that the same report, this IPES report, is pointing, because we are now obviously infusing the Namibian context through this IPES discussion, is that when you look at Namibia's own particular position here, is that Namibia is balancing environmental protection, nature conservation, human capital development, industrial development, rural development, agricultural development, thus still trying to find some sort of a semblance of keeping everybody happy at the same time. You know, it's that Gen X joke, 6767. I also don't know what 6767 means, guys. Don't ask me. You know, 6767, the juggling act. That's the situation that Namibia has experienced. Namibia is literally the dilemma of 6-7.
Okay, now I'm lost.
It's a nothing terminology, Hamut. I also had to look up what does the 6-7-6-7 mean. Apparently, the teachers in America go completely ballistic when their learners in the class do this. 6-7-6-7, miss. 6-7-6-7. And she's like, what is 6-7? And the whole class is just going absolutely crazy because it's a joke. One of the kids just, you know, it's just one of the kids that just go like 6-7 and then they start laughing.
Oh boy.
I know. It's ridiculous. But yeah. So, under this particular IPES situation, I can literally see Namibia's own particular dilemma.
Every country on the sustainable use of the environment has a dilemma. Minus Bhutan, maybe. Bhutan is one of those countries that I think that have a couple of kilometers ahead of other countries in terms of environmental protection, because they are, okay, first of all, you have to look up their size, and also the size of the population of the country.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, they also have a whole different geographic terrain.
Mm.
But when it comes to environmental protection,
which is mountainous,
very mountainous
and green, the locals would not want to talk to you because they think you are bringing bad luck to them when you go to Bhutan.
Yeah, they have
massive superstitions.
What's a gross domestic product?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is what?
They have something similar to that, but instead of economy, they have happiness.
What are we talking about, Helmut? It the conversation we had just before we stepped in?
No.
With Franzina?
No.
That kind of a conversation?
Nope. This one is a different one. Bhutan is known to have something very interesting when it comes to gross... gross domestic happiness instead of gross domestic product.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
That's Bhutan.
Isn't it the country that has the weird statistic that you must be happy, not unhappy?
For them, according to them. Now, this is coming from, the 1960s or 70s. I think it could even be earlier than that. 70s, yeah. Gross national happiness, Bhutan's development philosophy prioritizing collective well-being, culture, and environment over GDP.
Yeah.
Yeah. And this was introduced by their fourth king in the 1970s, I've never been to Bhutan, so I can explain the practical. In theory, the idea is everything that they plan on adopting, everything that they plan to adopting, it must not interfere with people's happiness or environmental damage. Like, do these guys have mine?
Why does this sound very close to what's the guy's name? Norway.
Norway is the same.
Yeah, Norway has a major emphasis on your life must be set. If you're a Norwegian, you must be sorted for life. We don't want to see poverty. We don't want to see street kids. We don't want to see people going hungry. We will beef up the welfare system to such an extent that you shouldn't even think of going to university. I like that kind of a perspective.
One more time.
You shouldn't even think about going to university. Let me explain to you another person I met, Helmut. There was a guy, a photographer from, okay, he was a multi-talented individual.
Did he say Norway?
Yeah. There was a guy that came here. He worked with my eldest brother, specifically also in the media landscape, but as a photographer. He was a Swede. He married one of Namibia's up-and-coming artists. I forgot the lady's name, but I interviewed her during COVID. I think, you know, for those of the listeners that remember the artist that I interviewed during COVID specifically about, you know, but it was her husband that I interviewed. And Johannes told me about, you know, how life was, but that was before I actually did the interview with him. And he said, and I asked him, Johannes, did you go to university? And he said, no, Dwight, I don't have to go to university. I said, why? Well, you know, because if things are already like just provided for you, why must you go to university? Now, obviously, yes, currently today, 2026, I know the Somalis or the Ethiopians, whoever they're in Sweden are an issue. But obviously, I'm talking about the policy direction that they took in terms of looking after their peoples. The same too for Finland as well. The Finns have a problem with drug abuse, specifically, under their youth and specific vulnerable peoples in their broader population setup.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? They've got
as in high addiction statistics or something.
Exactly. Or it's also linked because usually substance abuse is also connected to suicide rates and various other criminal aspects, which are societal elements, which Namibia does not measure in Namibia.
For some reason,
we have to go fishing things. We have to beg from entities which are supposed to generate these stats. But anyway, yeah, now I'm coming back. I'm calming down now.
Yeah.
What they did literally in Finland was they took partially abandoned flat buildings.
Yeah.
The government took it, renovated them, and these buildings became like safe havens for people either recovering from drug abuse. Or from drug abuse coupled with suicide tendencies, you know, self-harm tendencies. And they positioned a program with actual people that help these vulnerable persons in their society to try to become more functional. Not to say normal, because the word normal is a pretty vague term to use.
Yeah, very vague one.
But to become like functional members of society, of the broader Finnish society, specifically in the capital, Helsinki. And they were like, there was like a 19-year-old boy. There was like, the other one was like a 22-year-old guy. You can come and go as you please. You don't pay rent.
We don't do well when we, okay, so, when we have a low economic prosperity, we want to reach high economic prosperity level. Once we get there, we just keep developing problems, can we?
It's not just, it's a yes and a yes, primarily because we can obviously see what happens to the United States, because the United States they project to us, to the rest of the world, that they're the sort of like this best country in the world. But then you can just do a YouTube search and see the zombie cities of the United States with the fentanyl abuse and the opioid abuse and what it does to people. I mean, how many have you seen people literally hanging by their own legs?
You know what?
Someone standing like this for 30 minutes, crooked back, and they knocked out from substance abuse.
Jeez.
Now that's,
I've seen those videos, they're scary.
No, they are scary. That's why they call them the zombie cities, like Pittsburgh is the one. Los Angeles has become one. What's the other city's name? Philadelphia is the other one. Boston is another one. And New York is not there. What's the other city's name? There's another city that has such a major problem. Jacksonville is one, which is in Florida. It's not New Orleans. New Orleans is the one that was hit the worst by Hurricane Katrina. There's another city. Seattle has become one as well, which is on the east coast of the United States. No, on the west coast of the United States, closer to the Canadian border. And yeah, look, I understand Trump was unhappy with the fentanyl importation through Mexico. But, I mean, if your people have money to spend on unnecessary things in life instead of trying to improve your societies, sure, by all means, your people have the right to do what they have to. But here's the thing, in Namibia's context, when you look at this discussion, in comparison to the IPES discussion, Namibia still has to pave streets, Helmut, in many parts of this country. Let me say it again. We still have to pave streets in many parts of this country.
So you're telling me when we develop to the level of countries like Finland and Norway, those that are going to be public representatives are not going to get the rest those that are public representatives now thinks they are going to get.
No.
Nope.
It's also the same.
So they are developing countries' problem, and then they are developed countries' problems.
Yeah.
Bottom line, they are problems, developed or not.
Yeah, but here's the thing. For example, this is why the rest of Europe is so jealous about the Scandinavian countries, which also includes Germany for that matter. Let's expand into Germany and then Austria as well. These countries that I mentioned have a clear welfare perspective. They say for you to have a functioning economy, your people must be healthy. Your nation's people must be healthy.
That's not rocket science, yeah.
They must be housed, which is also part of the basic human rights discussion, even though Maslow's hierarchy of needs has been proven to be somewhat flawed, but Maslow actually gives you a guidance. Maslow is similar to, what's his name? Darwin. Everybody came and debunked Darwin, but remember, Darwin was working with pen and paper, bruh. Darwin was a Catholic, was a devout Catholic who was just observing things with his naked eye. He was the ship's doctor, the Navy ship's doctor, and he had the opportunity to convert his side hobby, his hobby, into an actual discipline that no other person in the world at that time was even thinking of. And he was the one that literally sprang forward the evolutionary debate versus what he as a Catholic had been told. Oh yes, things happened over 5 days, and poof, that's why we have life here.
You know,
and poof, suddenly Eve decided to go and bite an apple because Eve, you know, sort of like, what's that word? Doomed us all to what's it?
Eve was a great woman. First Columbus of the time. Just wanted to explore the garden. Now, okay.
It was a career. You are partially right.
But she was strong and independent. She didn't want it. She just wanted to explore. Anyway.
But I think that's the last time also that anyone went like, you know what, let's not leave decisions up to one person this time. There must be a group discussion about this.
Yeah.
I suppose the other thing that we Africans love. Let's have a group discussion, guys. And we all get there and then no one knows what to say. So what do we say, guys?
I think that's why, you know, even this day, dates are very difficult to put together. What are you eating? I don't know. But we are here. Didn't you think of it? We've been planning this for a week. Now, when it comes to development, someone is getting dumb today.
Because they're listening to us. Well, you know what? Unfortunately, that's what happens. But yeah, still saying, Amut. But okay, let me first take this.
Okay.
Vavitsa University, where the 2026 applications are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following courses: Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and the Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Vavitsa University, where everyone is an achiever.
Get your kicks from ShopRite Liquor Shops, a Smirnoff 1818 original vodka for only $159 and 99 cents. Harrier Whiskey and Gordon's Dry Gin for $179 and 99 cents each. KWV 3-year-old Brandy for $199 and 99 cents. Richelieu Brandy for $189 and 99 cents. And J&B Scotch Whiskey for just $239 and 99 cents. Please don't drink and drive. ShopRite Liquor Shops care. Now, going back to Busan, not Bhutan. That's a country. Bhutan is a country. Bhutan is a city in South Korea. Making my head spin. When it comes to the measurements provided in the 2010 agreement that that was compiled, or document that was produced at the end of this at the end of the conference, one thing they pointed out, this was in 2010, that the report finds that a wide range of methods knowledge and data exist for measuring businesses' impact and dependencies, which can already inform decisions and actions, but more is understood about applying methods for assessing impacts than for measuring dependencies. So how much, I don't see how that's rocket science. If you can assess the impact of how something is going to damage the environment, that should also be I think it's also easy to look at the environment and say, if you use this amount of this chemical, approximately this amount of the environment is going to be damaged. If we can use the Deloitte baseline survey, the baseline survey in Namibia's oil industry. If you look at, I think it's that page 7 or 8 of the the basic report, not the whole document.
Yeah.
If you can look at the timeline that's provided from the seismic survey to the decommissioning part, the reason why decommissioning is there for what? For you to make sure that whatever damage that you are causing to the environment while you're trying to get this oil, you will have to get everything in order when that resources is finite, because it's gonna run out. So that means methods of protection are there. So the scientific community already has a lot of ways on environmental protection in terms of any commercial activities that would want to get into, whether it's mining or agriculture. But if you are talking about Africa, 90% of that discussion is going to be in the extractive industry, which is why is it from last year or 2024 we started having this discussion of the uranium in situ mining discussion in the in the Mahagi region, because the main discussion was we share an underground aquifer with Botswana and South Africa. So that's that becomes an environmental issue, and to this day we're caught in between a rock and a hard place, because whichever direction we're going to take, the environment is going to take a hit.
Yeah.
Now,
it's a natural given.
Environment is going to take a hit.
And you know what's the worst part? Namibia, we even brag that we've got the largest open pit uranium mine in Rongo, which is Husab.
Yeah.
We brag about that. And if that's not enough of a environmental hit, to be known for, then I really don't know.
No, I don't think most of us have ever tried to look, to look up a picture of what an open pit mine looks like.
Yeah. And that they now, in some clear parts
of the world, you are bulldozing a lot of trees.
In some parts of the world now, they're even bringing automated mining in. There's this thing of a mine worker will not exist in the next 10 years, Helmut. That's the worst thing also.
So everything is being automated.
Yeah. I once watched back in 2024, I watched an online documentary about a town in the United States, specifically in the state of Utah, or it was in Arizona. No, or in Nevada, because they all three sitting right next to each other. And they all have similar climatic conditions to Namibia. And the town, its roots was in mining. The town began because it was an old mining town. Then obviously through America's own developmental, you know, policies and shifts and everything through the years, it obviously became now a settled urban settlement with various services being positioned close to it. But the mining industry was still active all through this particular period up until, I think, the 1980s or the 70s when the mine actually closed down. Now, I forgot what the actual resource was that they were extracting. But when mining came back to the town 2 years back, 2-3 years back, that way, and it was a joint venture between two international, it's Rio Tinto and Glencore. It's a joint venture by these two international companies in the United States in that mine facility, is that they recognized a new deposit right behind the town, which is a mountain you can see from the town. Mm-hmm. You can see the mountain from the town. And the proposal that was made by the two mining companies was that, yeah, there will be once again an employment injection taking place. So people will be recruited from the local community and XYZ and XYZ jobs were created here. The benefits of these jobs will lead to this and lead to that and lead to this and lead to that. And then the guy that worked at the mine, one of the old mining veterans from the town came and explained, but the function that they're explaining in their notice, the EIA notice, the Environmental Impact Assessment notice, mm-hmm. is a function that is 100% automated, meaning it looks like a screw situation. So they install various machinery and it mines in a circle. It mines the mountain yeah. down. So the mountain gets mined down. So how it looks like it's an automated function and it's just that it looks like a clock from the top if you view it from the top.
Yeah, basically open pit mines are descended that way.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is a mountain that is being mined down because the deposit is in the mountain.
Yeah.
And then this basically automated function.
You're literally turning a mountain into a pit.
Exactly. And what this one of these local community activists from that American town highlighted is that the process doesn't speak of in the process is 100% automated from somewhere else, meaning it can be remotely controlled from somewhere else. There would be no need for humans in mining anymore. I'm talking about something, a story that's 3 years old in that direction.
Now, you see, another problem with that is if you automate everything, that means a lot of people must be, must be provided for in terms of, in terms of the necessities that they need to live.
Yeah.
Somehow, because if you don't provide it, then you are going to have some serious conservancy problems.
True. Okay, you're still on conservancy. Remember when I spoke about the Tso Cape? So the Tso Cape factors into the conversation of that book that I told Sid mentioned earlier that I want to buy. About how capitalism, nature conservation, and obviously ancestral land rights discussions merge, which is a conversation I had 2 years back, was it 2023, here on Eagle FM, about the competing interests for land, or the competing interests. And we also had this when you and I started out here on the Home Run. We also started having that discussion. If you look at the competing interests, which no one in Namibia is talking about still till today, only we've done this conversation.
You went very far. Let me take you back to last year. Remember that discussion we had about, about the Minister of Mine going, should we mine in a...
About the
protected areas.
The joint policy, joint mining policy in tourism and protected areas.
Yeah.
That policy as well. Okay, so that was now an update.
Yeah, halfway through they went, well, if
when we see...
In the event of...
Yeah, possibly...
The money is more than the species life.
Or the money is more important than the 500 Namibians employed in tourism.
Yeah, we're going to drill, baby, drill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We shall henceforth commence forward. And we shall march to prosperity. Through mining.
I don't think I've ever gone through a report that beats around the bush like that one.
And that was just the executive summary, Helmut. That was just the executive summary that was literally telling us, you know what? Yes, Ministry of Environment's logo is here, But you know what? This is us. Ministry of Minds is thing.
Yeah.
This is us. Kay salons ni seni. You shall not convince us.
On sal mind the natural resources. Finish klar. You started the whole Afrikaans thing.
Well, for you to kavangonize it like that, Hamoud, I was like, no, man. No. But you know what? You know what? It actually was a good punchline. It was a good punchline. Okay, let's quickly take another live read. Ravicha University, where the 2026 applications are now extended for the Faculty of Health Sciences for the following courses. Certificate in Health Science Foundation, Diploma in Environmental Health Science, Postgraduate Diploma in Community Health Nursing, Postgraduate Diploma in Mental Health, Postgraduate Diploma in Occupational Health and Safety, Master of Science in Occupational Health and Safety, and the Master of Public Health. For more information, call 081-403-6406. Vilvicha University, where everyone is an achiever.
Get your kicks from a ShopRite Liquor Shops, a spin-off 1818 original vodka for only $159.99. Harry's Whiskey and Gordon's Dry Gin for $179.99 each. KWV 3-year-old brandy for $199.99. Richly brandy for $189.99. And J&B Scotch whiskey for just $239.99. Please don't drink and drive. ShopRite Liquor Shops care. So, back to the topic, not Afrikaans.
Look, it's we find ourselves, Hamoud, at a little bit of a four-way stop situation with literally four stops on it, and we're on the one stop. Namibia knows what it wants.
Yeah.
We've obviously got NDP-6 that is there to guide that particular pathway. Even though NDP-6, and I've mentioned this a few times before, it is not a complete thing because I just see we have this, we identify,
yeah,
and then we identify there again. And then in between, the strategy is not so clear cut because you can either see hurdles or you can either see there's something missing here and how are we going to sort that out. However, NDP6 is so far a document that just identifies the goals. It is how we make these goals manifest on the ground. Now, so far, Hamoud, I've seen heaven and earth, we've done the announcements of heaven and earth being moved specifically in regards to the Namibia's just energy transition participation, which is obviously the green hydrogen discussion. Yesterday, I went to an event specifically, which obviously is also on our menu of talking points. Even going into March, where the EU is now literally, Namibia is literally merging a lot closer in terms of the scientific participatory role. But once again, I immediately saw a major flaw being that we must participate in science and research with the EU. Where does the knowledge stay? Does it stay in Namibia or does it stay in European universities?
To answer that question, just ask yourself another question. Who's funding the research?
The EU. And you should see the monies, Helmut. Hey, brah, you should see the monies.
Always ask who is funding, because the person funding.
You should see the funding money being given.
Yeah.
And it's not chump change, Khutasa. It's not a couple of hundred thousand here, a couple of hundred. No, bruh. The one was 15 million euros.
Yeah.
And what happens is there is that you must put forward proposals.
Yeah.
The best proposal gets given the 14 million. The one proposal gets the 14 million euros.
Holy cow.
And you must be past master's level already. So you must already. And this is another thing that we Namibians also have to recognize. And this is why we've been lamenting the lack of reading culture in Namibia.
Yeah.
Is when you start talking about masters and doctoral levels, Anicia Peters mentioned it also there yesterday. You can literally count the Namibia's top academics on your hands. Namibia's top academics. But these top academics have to be put in a CEO position, in a chief administrative position. They're not doing what they are trained for. Being experts.
Well, that's what happens when you, when you're living in survival mode.
Are we in survival mode, Helmut?
Yeah, you're going to have to get a job.
Of course you'll have to get a job, yeah. But you'll be positioned there, you'll be positioned there, you'll be positioned. No. Do you know what some of the other particular concerns also that I immediately identified there as well is the emphasis on science. Now, the Global Gateway, which we've spoken about, which is that EU, overall EU package, the Great Green Deal. The Global Gateway starts from the Great Green, the European Great Green Deal initiative, because the Great Green Deal was established in 2020 during COVID. Then the Global Gateway emerged from the Great Green Deal. So the Great Green Deal was first negotiated on legislation that starts the Global Gateway. The Global Gateway then finds itself attached to the Samoa agreement that we flew off to Samoa to go and sign. Even though when I showed you the discussion on Monday, how we had a minister and another high-ranking government office literally saying, but this thing this agreement is not in line with the Namibian values, with the values enshrined in the Namibian constitution. And then, anyway, the presidency said, yeah, no, let's send the director general of NPC, go and sign the document. And because if we didn't sign it, Helmut, this event of yesterday would not have happened. This NCRST event, availing the funding opportunities for Namibian scientists and Namibian academics to participate. It would not have led to Namibia participating in the CBAM or in the Greater Green Hydrogen Program. Mm-hmm. It would have just slowed down.
There's too much to lose.
And then Namibia would have to explain why we did not sign, but we want part of the monies and the fundings, and we want to be part of the industrial policies and discussions. And then the question will still come back, but why did you not sign there in Samoa? Why were you not there? So, all in all, primarily also, IPES would also highlight and put a major exclamation mark on. It's actually a format of coercion, because you're coercing.
Yeah, you're being told
a least developed country or a developing country like Namibia. If you want to develop under our standards.
Yeah.
Which is the thing we did in the World Bank's Standards of Development.
Development Report.
Because it literally said there, that is a problematic scenario. Because once again, it's one side being in charge of the other side's ability of growth and prosperity.
If you're not at the table, you're on the menu. If you're not the chef, or the knife, or the chopping board.
If you're not at the table,
you're the cucumber. Sorry, guys. We're going to get there someday.
5 minutes out, man.
Let's take a break.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You're the person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Tune in to The Home Run with Helmut and Dwight on your number one talk radio station, Eagle FM, and be part of an in-depth discussion on events you didn't know you needed to hear until you do. From Namibia, Africa, and around the world, tune in from Monday to Friday from 4:30 to 6 p.m. only on Eagle FM.
Welcome back. 4 minutes to the hour of that's a business and economic segment, right?
Yeah.
Today's Wednesday. Yeah.
No. Not business and economics. China Corner.
Oh, China Corner.
Yeah.
You know, now I was thinking, you know, because at the back of my head, now I'm now thinking about what's this business with Roy. That's tomorrow.
Yeah, that's tomorrow. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we are trying to balance a seesaw here. When it comes to balancing, balancing environmental protection with making a means, especially on a commercial level, out of the environment, be it agriculture or anything that, you know, be it agriculture or mining. Well, fishing is the same thing. Yeah. So you are basically interacting with the environment in a way that you are commercializing out of it. Except you have to, you know, you have to do it in a controlled way. Otherwise, you're going to end up with, you know, with environmental issues like, if you're on land, desertification, which is why, you know, even the fish in the fishing industry, they give the fish a certain period of time to replenish before they go back for another catch again.
Yeah.
That's part of those, obviously factors into the environmental protection idea. Now, but when it comes to food security, yeah, that's a tricky one. The food security. Now we are talking about the use of inorganic fertilizer in commercial agricultural practice, and that one will be a very difficult seesaw to balance, if at all. And and you look at the one industry that the whole continent is heavily reliant on, and that's the extractive industry.
Yeah.
You're going to have to dig something, and a mine is not just it's not just a tiny hole that you're digging with a shovel. You're using heavy earth moving equipments here. That means the top level where you find all the trees and all the rodents and all the the living organisms, you're going to have to get rid of them.
Yep.
Yep. Unfortunately, for you to get to that diamond,
something has to happen.
Yeah. Now, how do you balance that between you maintaining a sustainable, how do you even practice a sustainable extractive industry?
It's impossible. It's impossible. I'll tell you today, it's impossible. The fishing guys could have done it.
The fishing guys, because, well, they go for a catch for a season and then spend another season to give the whatever it is that they are catching, time to replenish, because there's a reproduction.
And then I got ignored on that old fish, Ministry of Fisheries WhatsApp group, because I asked for, I'd like to see, you know, resource numbers and how they get, what's the sustainable extraction taking place. And then I was told, go talk to the Namibia Fish Consumption Trust. I was like, what's a good? You are the custodian of the data. You know, are you telling me to go talk there to someone else? Those guys are just selling the fish into the country. You are the point of contact for the resource.
Who's doing the catching?
Except the fishermen, obviously. And the Spanish, and the Chinese, and probably some Japanese, and probably some Brazilians and Angolans. Oh, because we don't know.
Didn't we go through another report about our fishing industry and how the only ship that was available for us to surveil our...
was standing in the dock.
Exactly.
For repairs. It was standing in the docks for repairs.
Translation, pirates were going
haywire.
Uh-huh.
They were absolutely partying out there. But yeah, that's the life of Namibia.
Land of the brave.
Oh, we are brave.
Well, I think when it comes to, when it comes to our, you know, only patrol boat being under service for over a year, I think we are taking this hole in Africa we share a little too far. I don't think we're supposed to be sharing our fish like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, that type of sharing and the Icelandic type of sharing, you know, that's not the type of sharing that we'll share. 6 o'clock on the dot, people. China Corner time. Yeah.
So, yeah, before we actually just head over into the China Corner scenario, it's also important, dear listeners, to cite that nothing happens without something else. Or it doesn't happen in isolation. There are impacts. direct, indirect, obviously.
Yeah, unintended consequences.
Yeah, but the nice thing is that I just want to sort of like also mention lastly before we go, is that this IPES report highlighted that $7 trillion of extractive proceeds are made from taking from the natural environment, but only $220 billion is reinvested back to rehabilitation, conservation efforts, and all that, you know, measures. In that regard, specifically, you can obviously see the great imbalance, because I think the $220 billion translates to like a 3% as well, versus the overall benefits that are derived from extracting from the natural environment. Mm-hmm. And this includes farming as well. Just if you guys in the farming situation thought that you are free, scot-free, it includes you guys as well as a sector, because there's obviously a lot of soil degradation taking place. There's obviously a lot of natural habitats are also being destroyed, specifically because of farming practices. There's also a lot of indigenous plant species that are either.
It's a good thing UNESCO logo on this document is on this document.
Yeah. The concerning thing is, Helmut, that this is once again an event that is held there, but it has to be an event specifically Namibia has to champion. But the same time that this event happened, or not the exact same day, but in the same sort of like time frame, because it happened 2 weeks from now, 2 weeks, it happened 2 weeks ago when this report was brought out.
Uh-huh.
And in the same time frame, we had the report on Namibia's economic diversification from the same UN, from another UN agency, about how Namibia should diversify away from the extractive industries.
Yeah.
But still, developing and strengthening and resilience around the extractive, the primary sectors, in terms of finding its particular industrial goal. I was going to use a different word, more poetic word, but it didn't come.
I think one of the people that were, that compiled this report have been listening to our president.
How? Okay, let me listen. He was a South African. The chair is a South African. Lutando Tsiba. He's a South African.
Yeah, the part that you just referenced about what goes into the, what's being the value of what's extracted into the environment and what's being put back in the environment in terms of rehabilitations. Very, there's a wide gap. That's under the heading of business as usual. Incentives are driving nature's decline. In other words,
that too.
Yeah. In other words, it shouldn't be business as usual. It should be business unusual. Welcome to Republic of Namibia. Now, anyway. They have the comparison here that in 2023, global public and private finance flows with directly negative impacts on nature were estimated to be at $7.3 trillion, of which the private finance accounted for $4.9 trillion, with public spending and environmentally harmful subsidies at about $2.4 trillion.
Yeah.
In contrast, $220 billion in public and private finances flows were directed in 2023 to activities contributing to the conservation and restoration of biodiversity, representing just 3% of public funds, public fund and incentives that encourages harmful business behavior or prevent behavior beneficial to biodiversity. So there's a lot of money that's being extracted into activities that's harming the environment.
Mm.
But only about 3% of that money, it's in trillions, only about 3% of it is channeled back into protecting the environment. In a translation, not enough is being done to protect the environment.
Yeah.
More destruction is being done than protecting. So
on that note, guys, it actually does bring us up to the end for today's discussion. Stay tuned. Tomorrow is budget day.
Oh, yeah. Budget unveiling for 2026-2027 financial year.
Yay.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll be back, guys. And obviously, we'll be taking into that particular discussion. On that note, let's see each other again. Same time, same place. Stay tuned for the next program.